chairs.
We'll call this meeting to order. We do have some people that need to catch a plane, so we want to make sure that the meeting moves on as quickly as possible. And we were delayed because the previous meeting that was held in this room was extended and didn't leave until about 10 minutes ago. So I appreciate your patience and your attendance here. I want to welcome all the committee members back to the Energy, Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee meeting, and hope that you had a good interim. We have a very serious session ahead of us and a very challenging year, and at the same time, we do also need to do, though we'll be focusing on the budget primarily, we still need to pay attention to policy, and actually it might be a good reprieve to focus on policy for a while. So today we're having a hearing on the digital television transition, which is coming on February 17th, although I was hearing rumors today it might be delayed. I'm not sure about that. Maybe some of our testifiers will be able to inform us about that. It means some changes for a lot of people, and what we're learning is that Minnesota is one of those states that has more people than the average in the country that do not have cable or satellite services, and so they will need converter boxes. And I understand that we're also running out of coupons for the converter boxes. So we're hoping to inform the public by this meeting and also to give you an opportunity to get educated about it in case your constituents call you. There also will be a series of community meetings that are held around the state during the next week, in which I'm not sure who's holding that. Who's conducting those meetings? Okay, the FCC is going to be conducting those meetings in the communities, and there is a schedule of those in your packet also. So at this time, we'll begin with Catherine Seidel and Tony Wilhelm, and I hope I got your names correct there. Catherine is the Chief of Consumer and Government Affairs Bureau for the Federal Communications Commission, and Tony is the Director of Consumer Education and Public Information for the TV Converter Box Coupon Program for the National Telecommunications and Information Administration in the U.S. Department of Commerce. Welcome.
Thank you.
You may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me here today to update you on the status of the digital television transition on a national level and with respect to Minnesota in particular. The Commission has been hard at work on a number of fronts to minimize
Ms. Seidel, just state your name for the record, please.
And Catherine Seidel, Chief of the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau at the Federal Communications Commission.
Thank you.
The conversion to digital television provides the opportunity for movie quality picture and sound, as well as potentially new programming choices. And even more importantly, it will allow us to significantly improve public safety communications throughout the country and usher in a new era of advanced wireless services. With the transition only 40 days away, much remains to be done. At the same time, the FCC has continued to make progress educating consumers and helping them prepare for the upcoming transition. Consumers who will be most affected by the DTV transition are those who receive only free over-the-air television through either a rooftop antenna or rabbit ears on their television set. In other words, they don't subscribe to cable, satellite TV, or other paid TV service. If you receive local broadcast stations through a paid provider such as cable or satellite, any TVs connected to that paid service are already prepared for the transition. One of the most important questions to ask yourselves and your constituents is what you need to do to be ready for the transition. By way of background, you have three choices for the digital transition on February 17th. First, you can connect your older analog televisions to a digital-to-analog converter box, which you'll hear more about from the next speaker. Second, you can use a digital television set, a television set with a built-in digital tuner. Or third, you can subscribe to cable, satellite, or another paid TV service. A question I frequently receive is just how many people will be affected by this transition. According to estimates from Nielsen Company, released in October of 2008, there are about 13.2 million television households, or 11.5% of the 114.5 million television households throughout the country, who rely exclusively on over-the-air reception. This represents a decline in Nielsen's estimates of both the percentage and number of such households within the past year. As of September of 2008, the Nielsen Company estimated about 13.6 million television households, or at that point it was 11.9% of all U.S. television households who were relying exclusively on over-the-air reception. As we get closer to February 17th, we expect these households will continue to prepare for the digital transition at an accelerated rate. In its August update to its report on the digital readiness of U.S. households, Nielsen estimated that if the transition were to occur then, about 8.9% of U.S. households would be completely unready. That is, that these over-the-air households had no sets with digital tuners and had not yet purchased a converter box. On December, by comparison, the Nielsen Company published estimates that showed a reduction in the percentage of unready households and showed that in December there were about 6.8% of U.S. households that were unready for the transition. For Minnesota, again based on Nielsen data, it is estimated that there are about 363,650 households that rely solely on free over-the-air television. These households represent 17.8% of the 2,042,050 television households in Minnesota. In addition to the Commission's ongoing education and outreach efforts, which I'll talk about in a moment, in September we gained real-world experience with the challenges facing consumers and broadcasters as we approach the February transition date. Specifically, on September the 8th, Wilmington, North Carolina became the first market in the country to transition from analog to digital television. At noon on that day, five local Wilmington stations turned off their analog signals and began broadcasting only digital to viewers in the five counties that comprise the Wilmington television market. This was a historic day, and we are pleased that the local broadcasters and the entire community embraced the challenge of helping the country prepare for the switch to digital. For its part, the Commission worked to educate, inform, and prepare Wilmington consumers for the transition. One of the most valuable lessons we learned from Wilmington is that DTV outreach success depends on the commitment of the local community, including local industry, government, and non-governmental organizations. Community stakeholders must take a leadership role for the large-scale messaging to take effect, and tapping into existing grassroots networks is critical. While we continue to move full steam ahead with our consumer education efforts, we must also be focused on resolving technical challenges. Some of these challenges are easily resolved and others are not. With respect to the callers who were experiencing difficulty following the switch to digital in Wilmington, our engineers and outreach staff worked directly with these consumers and assisted them in resolving their individual questions and issues. This helped us better understand the challenges that might arise across the country in February. Consumers called the FCC's call center with a variety of issues, including reception issues, challenges installing their converter boxes, having not received their coupon, or having neglected to ask for and apply for a coupon. But overall, the calls reflected nearly universal awareness of the transition to digital television. Our goal is that viewers will have access to the same television signals that they did prior to the transition, and the Commission has been working on specific tools that broadcasters can use to fill in otherwise analog loss areas. In November, the Commission adopted rules for the use of distributed transmission systems, or DTS, technologies. DTS may provide broadcasters with an important tool for providing optimum signal coverage for their viewers. For many broadcasters that are changing channels or changing transmitting locations when they go digital, DTS may offer a good option for continuing to provide over-the-air service to current analog viewers, as well as for reaching viewers that have historically been unable to receive a good analog signal due to terrain or other interference issues. The Commission also recently circulated a notice of proposed rulemaking that proposes the creation of a new replacement digital television translator service to permit full power stations to continue to provide service to loss areas that have occurred as a result of their digital transition. The item proposes to allow broadcasters to apply for special temporary authority now during the pendency of the rulemaking. Relatively few consumers in Wilmington lost their broadcast channels as a result of the digital cliff effect. For those of you unfamiliar with this terminology, analog TV pictures degrade gradually. As the signal gets weaker, the picture becomes progressively poorer or becomes snowy. In contrast, digital television pictures remain crystal clear even with relatively weak signal levels. However, once the signal falls below a certain threshold, the picture rapidly breaks up or disappears. In other words, a small change in the received signal at that point can make the reception seem to go over a cliff. In such situations, viewers may lose their picture altogether. Our engineers have estimated that about 5% of over-the-air viewers may need a new antenna to receive digital television due to this digital cliff effect, or less than 1% of all viewers should need a new antenna. The data from Wilmington suggests a similar estimate. Overall, the early switch to digital in Wilmington has been instrumental in helping the Commission to identify, understand, and hopefully prevent some future problems with the rest of the nation when it transitions in February. Full power broadcasters in Hawaii will also be making an early transition to digital at noon on Thursday, January 15th, next week. Hawaii broadcasters requested approval for an early transition because of environmental concerns associated with the removal of existing analog-only transmitters equipment at the top of Mount Haleakala on Maui. Commission education efforts in Hawaii are similar to those that we utilized in Wilmington. The FCC is leveraging strategic partnerships with industry partners and local community-based organizations in order to educate consumers about the expedited transition date. An aggressive calendar of consumer awareness events on all islands began in early November. On December 24th, the Commission adopted a notice of proposed rulemaking to implement the recently enacted Short-Term Analog Flash and Emergency Readiness Act. The Commission sought comment on the Commission's proposed procedures for full power stations to continue to broadcast public safety, emergency, and digital transition information on analog signals for 30 days after the February 17, 2009 transition date. All comments were to be filed on or before January 5th, and all the replies are due today. Technical progress on converting broadcast facilities to all digital is continuing. Based on the status reports that the Commission requires broadcasters to make, 94% of all active full-power television stations are either fully operational with digital service or are on track to have their full digital service operational by the deadline of February 17th. Approximately 6% of the stations indicate that they will serve at least 85% of their service population on that date, with final full coverage digital operations beginning sometime thereafter, ranging from 1 week to 6 months. The Commission gave such flexibility if a broadcaster faced unique technical challenges, such as weather-related issues or coordination issues with other stations. There are 34 full-power broadcast television stations in the state of Minnesota. Of the 34 stations, 11 have completed the construction of their post-transition facilities. 18 additional stations are on track to have their full digital service operational by February 17th of 2009, and the remaining 5 stations have filed a phased transition request seeking additional time after the February 17th in order to complete construction. Shifting to consumer education and outreach efforts, word of the digital transition is spreading quickly throughout the country. These are just a few of the highlights of the Commission's DTV-related education and outreach activities. In August, the Chairman announced a nationwide initiative to increase awareness about the upcoming transition to digital television. As part of our efforts to prepare consumers, the Commission identified television markets in which the largest number of viewers will have to take action in order to be prepared for the transition. Specifically, we identified 82 target markets for specific DTV outreach, including all those markets in which more than 100,000 households, or at least 15% of the households, rely solely on over-the-air signals for television. Within these markets, we are aiming to educate the groups most vulnerable to the transition, including senior citizens, non-English speakers, low-income consumers, people with disabilities, and people living in rural and tribal lands. The chairman, commissioners, as well as other commission staff are fanning out to these markets to raise awareness and educate consumers in the days leading up to the digital television transition on February 17th. At each stop, there is a public event such as a town hall meeting, workshop, or roundtable, and demonstrations to highlight the digital transition. In coordination with these visits, the Commission is working with local broadcasters and radio stations to increase the broadcasts of radio and television, DTV, public service announcements, conduct interviews, and run stories about these visits. The Commission has visited 45 areas thus far as part of this tour and plans many more trips in the coming weeks. The Commission is also coordinating with the broadcasters to explore whether at the same time stations may participate in a temporary turnoff of their analog signals. During these so-called soft tests, analog customers see a message on their screens informing them of the transition and how to become prepared. The Commission has also been working with the National Association of Broadcasters and the state broadcast associations, networks, and network affiliates to encourage every station to participate in the nationwide soft test that occurred on December 17th and another that will occur next week on January the 12th. To further increase and enhance awareness, the Commission has conducted over 2,270 DTV awareness sessions, established 746 partnerships, and made over 9,243 visits to various organizations around the country to disseminate DTV information. In Minnesota, the Commission has conducted DTV awareness sessions at the Senior and Community Center in East Bethel, with the International Falls Area Chamber of Commerce, at the Hmong Cultural Center in St. Paul, and the Hearing Loss Association of America in Golden Valley and Minneapolis, among others. In addition, in St. Louis County, as was mentioned a little bit earlier, next week we have 5 public presentations scheduled, including an Ask the FCC presentation by one of the associate chiefs of our media bureau. The Commission has attended more than 64 conference events and partnership meetings in the state of Minnesota, including numerous ones with various city and county governmental organizations and officials, the Regional Salvation Army, the Goodwill, Health and Human Services, Service Employees International Union, the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, as well as county and regional library systems throughout the state. In addition, the Commission has made over 175 visits to various organizations throughout the state, including Twin Cities, Duluth, St. Cloud, Rochester, and International Falls on the Canadian border. FCC staff has visited senior centers, governmental offices, churches, thrift stores, ethnic supermarkets, libraries, recreation centers, and held events at shopping malls and retailers to help ensure that we reach the customers who need assistance and/or may be harder to reach. Another key part of the Commission's education and outreach efforts has been the development and distribution of consumer literature. These tools are an effective means to provide information about the transition. To date, over 14 million pages of DTV-related publications and over 111,200 posters have been distributed to consumers, community-based organizations, and other organizations and governmental entities. In addition, the FCC's 4 most popular DTV publications have been translated into 25 languages in addition to English, including Spanish, Amharic, Arabic, Cambodian, Chinese, Creole, Farsi, French, Greek, Hmong, Italian, Japanese, Korean, Kurdish, Laotian, Navajo, Polish, Portuguese, Romanian, Russian, Somali, Taiwanese, Tagalog, Vietnamese, and Yupik. The publications include a DTV one-page flyer, frequently asked questions, and information sheets on how to install a converter box, information about antennas, and a troubleshooting guide. In addition, the entire DTV.gov website is available in Spanish. Another FCC initiative designed to help spread the word was launched in August when the chairman announced the creation of an FCC speakers bureau for groups throughout the country to request FCC speakers to discuss the digital transition at their upcoming meetings and conferences. We have received 188 of those requests. The requests are being handled by staff traveling for conferences as well as part of our outreach on our town hall meetings and by our field agents throughout the country. You may also have heard that just this week, on January the 6th, the FCC selected 12 grassroots organizations and local agencies to help over-the-air viewers prepare for the digital transition. These selections are worth up to $8.4 million and are the culmination of a full and open procurement process. The Commission sought proposals to conduct outreach in all parts of the country with a particular focus on the 82 markets with the higher over-the-air television populations. In particular, the FCC selected organizations dedicated to serving populations across the country most at risk in the digital transition, including senior citizens, people with disabilities, and Spanish-speaking households. Specifically, the FCC sought the assistance of local, regional, and national organizations with converter box procurement, installation, the establishment and staffing of local call centers, educating consumers about the transition, and other local grassroots efforts. Another example of our partnering with governmental entities and other organizations is our partnership with the United States Postal Service. Through this effort, we are displaying DTV education posters in all 34,000 post offices across the country, running through the end of the transition in February. The posters are targeted to instill a sense of urgency to consumers and use the slogan, "On February 17, 2009, your TV is changing. Are you ready?" The FCC has also utilized the media in our outreach efforts and has created 12 television and 17 radio public service announcements, or PSAs, in English and Spanish. The PSAs feature the FCC's commissioners. In addition, an educational video released in November walks consumers through the basic steps of setting the basic steps of the transition and demonstrates how to set up a converter box. And I think we have some of those available today. Another way that we're reaching consumers is through nationwide billboards and transit ads. The FCC has obtained donated space for billboards and transit ads for 1 to 2 months in the 72 high target population markets throughout the country. The FCC is also placing DTV ads in magazines, which some of you may have already seen, nationwide. For example, the FCC, in partnership with the AARP, is including DTV information in the widely distributed AAP publications. In addition, the FCC either already has or will be advertising in 15 additional magazines, including American Profile, Better Homes and Gardens, Ebony, Essence, Family Circle, Farm Journal, Hispanic, People in Espanol, People Magazine, Reader's Digest, Soap Opera Digest, TV Univales, U.S. Weekly, USA Today, and Vanidades. What can we do? In the past, we have sent a package of DT education materials to congressional offices for members to distribute to their constituents. We're also happy to make commission staff available to participate and make DTV presentations at local town hall meetings or other outreach events that members have planned with their constituents. Some additional things that can be done to help spread the word about DTV include scheduling tele-town hall meetings on DTV and having FCC staff participate, distributing DTV publications to constituents and displaying DTV posters, coordinating DTV outreach sessions with consumers and community-based organizations in your area, scheduling train-the-trainer sessions for the staff with the FCC and community leaders. And, of course, you can link to the FCC's DTV website, which provides a huge amount of useful DTV information written with consumers in mind, available at dtv.gov. In conclusion, the Commission is devoting significant resources to facilitating a smooth transition. Nearly every bureau and office at the Commission has been involved in this effort, including our field offices throughout the country. We intend to take whatever actions are necessary to minimize the potential burden of the transition on consumers and maximize their ability to benefit from it. The next 40 days will undoubtedly be challenging. Nevertheless, it is my hope that through the combined efforts of government, industry, advocacy, and grassroots organizations, American consumers will reap the rewards that the digital transition has to offer. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we'll wait for questions until Mr. Wilhelm is finished with his testimony. Mr. Wilhelm.
Thank you, Chairwoman Pretner-Solon and Ranking Member Rosen, for the opportunity to testify this afternoon and to provide a status report on the TV Converter Box Coupon Program. My name is Anthony Wilhelm, and I'm the Program Director for the TV Converter Box Coupon Program in the U.S. Department of Commerce. The NTIA is an agency in the U.S. Department of Commerce. We have been directed by Congress to implement the $1.5 billion coupon program with the enactment of the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005. The program allows each U.S. household the opportunity to obtain up to two $40 coupons to be used toward the purchase of eligible converter boxes. These converter boxes allow older model analog TVs to keep receiving a broadcast signal when full power broadcasters switch to 100% digital broadcasting after February 17, 2009. NTIA has developed a consumer-friendly program as indicated by its popularity. Consumers can apply for coupons 24 hours a day and 7 days a week through a toll-free hotline 1-888-DTV-2009. A consumer can also apply online and find a wealth of information about the program at www.dtv2009.gov. The application process only takes a few minutes to complete. The program has been widely promoted through a TV ad blitz that has been valued at over $1.2 billion. The result has been that over 25 million households have requested over 46 million coupons through January 5, 2009. Including over 1 million coupons ordered by Minnesotans. A variety of converter boxes are available in retail stores, most ranging in price between $50 and $70. NTIA is partnering with the Federal Communications Commission to test certified converter boxes in its labs to ensure they meet our performance specifications. Consumers can find our converter box reviews through consumer reports and other online sites such as CNET. Consumers can shop for coupon-eligible converter boxes at over 34,000 retail stores across the country, including 577 locations in Minnesota alone. There are actually 26 stores within 5 miles of this historic Capitol building where consumers can use their coupons to purchase a converter box. We have made it easy for consumers to shop for converter boxes by including in the mailing accompanying a consumer's coupons a list of the 8 closest retail locations where converter boxes are sold based on the consumer's zip code. Consumers should use this list to call ahead to make sure boxes are available. Consumers also have the added convenience of 50 online and telephone retailers. 18 million coupons have been redeemed in stores nationwide, including about 500,000 here in Minnesota. The Consumer Electronics Association has assured consumers that retail stores will continue to be stocked with plenty of converter boxes. The good news is that the overwhelming majority of Americans are ready for the transition. Most American households subscribe to pay TV service, such as cable or satellite, which are generally not affected by the digital transition. For example, there are about 2 million TV households in Minnesota, according to Nielsen, and about 20% of those are broadcast-only households. That is, they rely on an antenna to receive free television. Those broadcast-only households that do not take timely action are at risk of losing their television signal. These households can purchase a converter box with or without a coupon, connect their analog set to a subscription television service, such as cable or satellite, or buy a digital television. Minnesotans have higher than average reliance on over-the-air television. We have been monitoring coupon requests closely and are gauging progress on a market-by-market basis in the state. While there has been steady coupon request numbers by over-the-air households in the Minneapolis-St. Paul and Duluth-Superior markets, Mankato has experienced coupon request rates that are below what is expected. Therefore, NTIA has engaged in special outreach to this market. Overall, the TV Converter Box Coupon Program has been popular with Minnesotans. As I mentioned, over 1 million coupons have been requested by over 550,000 households. Just over 300,000 of these households have certified that they do not have TVs connected to cable or satellite service. As I said, over 490,000 coupons have been redeemed by Minnesotans since the program started. Because it takes around 6 weeks for a householder who wants to keep their TV set working with a converter box to apply for their coupons, buy their converter box, and try it to make sure it works, NTIA launched its Apply, Buy, and Try campaign on September 30th, 2008, to urge consumers to prepare early. We set the end of the calendar year, December 31, 2008, as a date by which consumers should apply so they could be ready before February 17, 2009. The campaign was very successful. In the last quarter of 2008, over 4 million over-the-year households, including over 100,000 in Minnesota, applied for coupons. Because of the success of our Apply, Buy, and Try campaign, NTIA is bumping up against its funding ceiling and is now placing applicants on a waiting list. Coupons expire after 90 days, and about half of them are not being used. Funds from expiring coupons are returned to the government and can be used to fill new requests. As funds become available from expiring coupons, coupons will be mailed out to eligible households on a first-come, first-served basis. We are working with Congress on options to address the situation and get folks off the waiting list as soon as possible. Some consumers who have not acted may need special assistance to complete the digital transition, such as the elderly. NTIA made two awards in November to provide hands-on assistance to vulnerable Americans, including assistance with applying for coupons or installing converter boxes. With these awards, NTIA has established two DTV assistance centers in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area to provide information and technical assistance to consumers. These are the Lau Assistance Center and the Main Street Project, which will open their doors next week to provide help to consumers. We have also partnered with Meals on Wheels in Minneapolis and St. Cloud and with the Metropolitan Area Agency on Aging in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and seven counties of Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington to assist homebound seniors with the transition. It is important for consumers to realize that it may be too late for them to apply for coupons and to expect them to be received before February 17, 2009. By law, NTIA must mail coupons out to consumers via the United States Postal Service after the applications have been processed. If consumers who have not acted intend to have TV service on February 18, 2009, then they may want to consider purchasing a converter box without the coupon if they are unable to obtain one beforehand. They may, of course, purchase a digital TV, or they may consider subscribing to a pay TV service such as cable or satellite. Along with hundreds of our partner organizations, NTIA has been promoting a friends and family message such that an individual who has an extra coupon may consider donating it to an organization that has been set up, such as our DTV assistance centers, to help consumers with the transition. As one example of voluntary activity underway, many TV and radio stations have been collecting donated coupons and are distributing them to their viewers and listeners as they call in seeking assistance. Some of your witnesses coming up are also doing tremendous work to help Minnesotans prepare for the digital transition. Thanks again for the opportunity to update you on the progress we have made in assisting consumers through the TV Converter Box Coupon Program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Alsing.
Madam Chair, I have a question for Mr. Wilhelm. I can understand people, you know, some people getting extra coupons and stuff and not using them, but up to 50% of them aren't being used. Can you explain that? How that happened?
Right. Well,
Mr. Wilhelm.
Yes, ma'am. Chairwoman Prettner-Salone, Senator Olson. When we started this program, we actually looked at redemption rates for coupons, and similar type coupons actually redeem at a much lower rate. So we actually think 50% plus is an excellent redemption rate. A lot of consumers, you know, apply for these things and then make other decisions. You know, again, I laid out the other options consumers have. Many digital TVs will be sold this year. You know, some people will decide to subscribe to pay service. And so 50-plus percent redemption is not is actually very good from our standard. I think other similar-type coupons actually redeem in the single digits. We talked to a lot of experts again at the beginning, and so 50-plus percent is actually very good.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Rosen.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be honest. I can't imagine being older and because this is hard to get your hands around. So you've done an amazing job with your ad campaign. I'm a little confused, and hopefully I'll have no problems February 17th. Who knows? And it sounds like you put a tremendous amount of resources into the ad campaign. Is that correct? Yep.
This is voluntary on the part of broadcasters who, in their own interest, you know, interest of their viewership, have donated over $1 billion, including the cable companies. So these ads are prolific, and the latest surveys I've seen show that there's universal awareness of the program. The real goal is to turn that awareness into action. You know, we need those consumers that are left who haven't decided or for whatever reason haven't taken action. And some of those, I think you're right, are people that need that additional assistance. They may be homebound. They may speak a language other than English. So we really need to go the extra mile for those citizens. And I think what you've heard today is there are a lot of programs and organizations that we've tapped into to provide those sorts of hands-on assistance.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Ms. Idell, you mentioned that there was five stations in Minnesota that are applied for a phase-in, a transition.
Yes.
What is the boundaries on that phase-in, the timeline? So they will not be ready on February 17th, is that correct?
Ms. Seidel?
Madam Chairman and Senator, there are five stations that have asked for extra time to transition in, and I can get that information to you exactly how much time each station asked for. I don't have it right here with me, but I know overall the extra time ranged from like a week to 6 months, so it's somewhere between that time frame, and I can give you the specifics and get it back to you. And it was a lot of in the cases, there were reasons that were provided that when they requested this additional time, and in many cases it was weather-related or other technical challenges that made it more challenging for those particular stations than the norm.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
And Ms. Seidel, is that any of one of the major?
Ms. Seidel.
I can talk with you afterward. I have a binder, and I have maps, and I can thumb through it, and I can give you the answer.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wilhelm, I was just curious. I think you answered my first question, I think, was that the broadcasters and a lot of television stations are doing paying for most of the ad campaign. Right. The converter box, is that out of taxpayer dollars, or how is that being funded?
Mr. Seidel.
Madam Chair, Senator Dole.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Wilhelm. Nope. I'm sorry.
That's okay. The coupons are basically $40 toward the purchase of converter boxes. Manufacturers have created this product, and retailers are delivering them to consumers. It's a pretty amazing story. Actually, this is a brand-new product that was developed. We're testing it in partnership with the FCC to make sure these meet our specifications and are being delivered in over 30,000 retail locations across the country. I'm sure you'll hear from Best Buy later, who's been a terrific partner in this. So they're created by manufacturers. We have great competition, which has meant we have very affordable prices. So this isn't government making and providing a market. It's really we're relying on the market to do this, and the government's providing a subsidy, basically, to make this as affordable as possible for consumers.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Wilhelm, then in that subsidy, is that you mentioned a dollar amount of like $1.5 billion. Is that what the subsidy is, or what's
correct.
The total subsidy?
Mr.
Madam
Wilhelm.
Chair, Senator Dole, $1.5 billion gets you to 33.5 million coupons at $40 each. So each household can apply for up to two of those, and so that's how the math works. So
okay.
$1.34 billion of the 1.5 are for the coupons, 33.5 million coupons. The additional $160 million is for administration of the program, to actually have a call center and to distribute these coupons to consumers. We hired IBM, who's our prime contractor, who's doing all that back-end work to make this as consumer-friendly as possible.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize, you covered a lot of ground, and so I might have missed it. But I'm wondering, because a lot of the coupons are expiring, and I assume the latest date for which they're good, I don't know what's the latest date for a coupon. Do they all expire on February 17th?
No, they're good for 90 days. When you order them, mm-hmm. when we issue them, we put them in the mail, it's 90 days from that date. Anyone who's getting a coupon now obviously doesn't have to worry about the expiration date. The real worry is getting them in time to have uninterrupted service on February 18th.
So, Madam Chair, I'm thinking about what's going to happen on February 18th, because I suspect, despite all the efforts that you're making, obviously there's some people who are not getting a converter box, and it may be in some cases they just aren't able to, and in some cases they just somehow didn't get the message, and or both. And so that's when we're going to get all the phone calls from our constituents. I suspect we will hear from people then when this happens, for those folks, that small percent out there that really is unprepared. And I'm wondering what we can offer at that point. And I heard on the, and maybe you touched on this, so again, I apologize if you said this, but that once the coupons expire, I've got an expired coupon in my desk if anyone wants one, because I'm one of those frugal households that doesn't have cable, and I got my coupon and everything worked fine, and I have one coupon left that's expired. And so are you going to reissue coupons then for those that expire, so that will there be a chance for people to be able to still get them after that deadline?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, the answer is yes. Your coupon has basically been resurrected mm-hmm. to the next consumer. So that $40 has come back to the government. We're then able to reissue a coupon to the next person in line, which is what we're doing now. Unfortunately, we have demand that's higher than the supply of mm-hmm. expiring coupons. Therefore, we have this waiting list. As I mentioned in my testimony, okay. we hope that to be a very temporary situation. We're working with Congress as we speak. I'm sure you're reading the newspapers. A lot of pressure on everyone to figure this out and make sure consumers can get these coupons. So I imagine that waiting list will disappear pretty quickly. The bottom line, though, is it takes us, 4 weeks to process these coupons and mail them out. Mm-hmm. So the real challenge is, as you mentioned, on February 18th, the person who's hasn't gotten the message yet, what can we offer them? And we've been promoting, I actually met this morning at the Lau Center here in town, and we're looking at this donation program for people like you who maybe ordered a coupon that they didn't need. Let's get that in the hands of these assistance centers, so when mm-hmm. someone calls, we can provide that donated coupon to them. And then we cut out the 4 to 6 weeks of processing, so they're able to be made whole in real time versus going through the whole application process. So that's what we're trying to do to the extent we can at this point in time.
Senator John Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know who this would be for, either Mr. Wilhelm or Ms. Seidel. I know that we're making the switch according to this sheet here that for airwaves for the police and fire communications. When TV stations have sent out broadcast signals and they're analog and digital, is it cost more to do both? Are they going to be saving money by going to digital only? Do you know?
Madam Chair and Senator Dahl, today most stations are operating in both analog and digital, and mm-hmm. because they're operating in both analog and digital, it is using more airwaves for them to be transmitting and simultaneously in the two different modes. So that's how the benefit accrues to public safety entities, is once that the cutover occurs and they cease operating on analog, that analog spectrum is being made available to public safety, some of it, and then some of it is being made available for commercial uses like advanced wireless broadband services. So that once the analog ceases, that's when the spectrum's freed up and it can be made available for other uses.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and then Ms. Seidel, my question is there different types of equipment to send out those different signals, so then they won't have to use that particular equipment anymore? The follow-up question that, too, I guess, is I've noticed that there's this full power spectrum or something where some stations aren't operating at a certain power level. Is that the case? I'm not sure how that works, but if that's, I'm trying to get to the bottom, does this cost more to send out both signals versus just one signal?
Ms. Seidel.
Madam Chair and Senator Dole, They use different equipment and different spectrum. When they shift to just one, they would just be using the digital infrastructure. So they would be using the digital transmitters, the digital equipment. Right now, they have both sorts of equipment. So they will be freeing it up, but it's an infrastructure that they already have. Because right now, like I said, they're operating in both. So they've got the analog infrastructure and the digital. They'll be turning off the analog, just using the digital. And I forgot the second part of your question.
Yeah, it's just, I'm assuming, like I say, it's just simply going to be cheaper for them to do that by economizing. They don't have to do both. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Wilhelm.
If I could add to that, Senator Dahl, it's worth us all remembering, you know, why this transition is happening, to kind of build on what you were saying. One of the important recommendations of the 9/11 Commission was to make sure our first responders, our police, our firefighters, our emergency responders can all interoperate. They can talk to each other when emergencies happen. And so the real goal of freeing up the spectrum, in addition to getting consumers a better product — digital is definitely better than analog — was to free up the spectrum so we can protect our citizens. So that's why we want to do this in the most expeditious manner possible. So I think it's all worth us all remembering.
Well, I'm kind of embarrassed to even say this publicly, but I'm one of those that tried to connect my converter box, and I can't get it connected. I'm trying to put it through my, and I think of myself as being, you know, more technically savvy than some people, obviously not as much as I need to be or as others are.
I haven't done mine yet either.
You haven't either?
No.
Well, I've tried. I've spent hours on it, quite frankly. I'm embarrassed to say. I have tried to connect it through my DVD player. And I think, and what I've learned just in recent days is that you need an antenna, and you might need a different antenna than the antenna you were using before, and that that some of the converter boxes are different than other converter boxes. Some converter boxes you can get more channels than you can others, but actually I get better service without. Right now, I'm sure I'm going to have a blackout on February 17th, but any advice on any of that? And the reason I ask that is I'm wondering what kind of reception you get to the meetings you've had in the senior centers, where you and how many of the seniors are actually coming to your meetings, and who is this assisting them in getting set up?
If I might start, Madam Chair.
Ms. Seidel.
I think, just as an initial matter, we do have, I think, three different installation guides, because your point is well taken about actually installing the boxes, that the boxes really can differ. Whether you have it set up on channel 3 or channel 4 can make a difference. Whether you do the auto scan at the beginning and whether you rescan as channels in your area go digital, there are a number of things that can make it, I think, a bit more challenging to get the service. But we do have some good installation guides, and I'll make sure that we get some sent out. In addition, there are your question about how people were helping seniors and how they will fare in the transition. That early on, both NTIA, our industry partners on the broadcast and cable and equipment side, all recognized that senior citizens were going to be a group that we really needed to take special attention to. And the efforts of our field agents, as I said, the vast majority of the 9,000-some visits that we have had around the country to different places are indeed to senior centers and community centers, but primarily senior centers. And I think the hands-on piece of this for seniors is going to be key, and that's why we have been partnering with organizations, both voluntarily and now through, you know, the procurement process, to make partnerships with organizations that serve that community on a daily basis and that are actually in the local communities for that subset of the population that really is just going to need some hands-on assistance.
Just to add to that, Madam Chair,
Mr. Wilhelm.
NTIA made a grant in November. I mentioned it in my testimony to the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging. We provided $2.7 million to provide hands-on assistance to seniors, knowing that, as you rightly indicate, they need more than just a phone number. They need someone to actually help them. And so Meals on Wheels is a part of that partnership, for example. So when they go deliver meals, they'll also be doing an assessment of that household situation. Do they need a converter box? If so, they'll help them apply. They'll help them purchase the box. since some are obviously are homebound and can't get that themselves, and then they'll also help them install it. And so I think you're right. That's the sort of assistance that's necessary for quite a few elderly Americans out there.
And then I noticed that you have done some outreach in some diverse groups, but many of them are really in metro areas or population hubs and not really in the rural areas, which I'm sure that would be difficult to get to. But what do you anticipate in the rural areas, and are people getting the word there as well as they are in the larger population centers?
Madam Chair, I think your point is well taken, and we have actually done a made rural communities and people living on tribal lands a targeted group for our outreach efforts. And, you know, for example, I think we have people in the coming week that, if they aren't already, will be in Brownsville, Texas, and Laredo, Texas, and we've had a fair number of people who've been up to Juneau, Alaska, and Fairbanks, and people who've been to some of the more rural communities and tribal communities in Navajo parts of the country and Washington State and even in this area. So I think your point's well taken. One of the ways we've been trying to reach them, as well as the, you know, on-the-ground efforts that our own employees can undertake, is by working with organizations like the 4-H who works, and you'll hear from later, you know, directly in communities, many of which are rural, and then also working with mayors throughout the country, not just the mayors of the bigger cities, but the mayors in some of the smaller communities. And we find that they're obviously hugely effective at helping to get the word out. So those are some of the ways we've endeavoring to do this.
Okay.
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Wilhelm.
Just to build on that, you know, the FCC has done a great job on the ground, and we've been complementing that by doing a lot of earned media. So, for example, in the 2 days I've been here, I've been doing a lot of radio interviews in the rural communities in the state to try to explain how a lot of those folks need the special analog pass-through box. You mentioned earlier that these boxes are a little bit different, and so in rural areas, because they get low-power stations or translators to boost the signal to these areas, they need a special type of box. And so getting that information out is really important so they don't purchase the wrong box, get it home, and then think there's something wrong with the box and try to, you know, go through a lot of hassle. So getting that information out is really important to rural areas. So we're doing that kind of earned media campaign, which is supplementing the really great on-the-ground work the FCC is doing.
Well, I also heard that there are some converter boxes where you can get more channels than on other converter boxes. Well, I haven't been able to turn mine on yet, so I don't know how many I've got. Is that true?
I'm not sure that's true. I think we have Best Buy here are the experts on the boxes. Later on, they can answer that.
Well, that's where I bought mine.
I thought they all basically got the same. Yeah, the multicasting depends on the origin of the signal. In markets where the broadcaster has to be providing those channels in order for them to be received. So it's not inherent in the box. It's inherent on the market and who's providing those additional channels.
But, Senator?
Excuse me, Senator Sharon. From Mankato?
From Mankato, yes, from Mankato, St. Peter area. Thank you. I was alerted to your comments about the area agencies on aging
right.
having some grant money available to them
right.
or food programs that are in the home
yeah.
to be able to complement that contact with an assist on this, or at least an assessment of the need and then maybe some. Can you tell us, is that money that's targeted for those area being in Minnesota, are our area agencies on aging applying for that and utilizing that in the rural part of the state or throughout the state for that matter?
Mr. Wilhelm.
Madam Chair, Senator
Sharon.
Sharon, sorry.
Yes.
I think I gave the list earlier. I know it was a lot of testimony, so I'm sure it was missed, but We did provide funds to the Metropolitan Area Agency on Aging in the Twin Cities, but also are serving, and I apologize, I don't know if these counties are rural or not, but it's Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington, as well as Minneapolis, St. Paul, and then St. Cloud. So I don't believe we're in Mankato.
No, that's those, pretty metropolitan
those
area.
Pretty
St. Cloud
metro,
is
okay.
urban.
They certainly got. We certainly wanted the in foray to not just be in the urban areas but also be in the rural areas. But $2.7 million had to be spread out nationally. So they're actually in 35 states, which is great, but they may not be in every community, unfortunately, in every state.
Senator, well, just one follow-up question.
Senator Sharon.
Is that funding source gone now?
Yes,
it's not.
Yes, Senator, it is. Sorry about that.
Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this probably might even be for somebody that comes up in the future, but I was just thinking out loud, and I'm a little farther behind than you guys since I haven't even applied for coupons yet. But then again, I'm not a big TV watcher. I guess the rest of the family will be watching movies for whatever time it takes to figure out a coupon. But I was thinking, in doing that, some people will buy the digital televisions and some people will buy converters, and other people like myself, if I can't get a coupon for a converter box, my televisions aren't worth the $40 or $70 to buy a converter box for, I guess. Are we anticipating a huge increase in e-waste, or have we seen a huge increase in e-waste over this conversion, and how are we dealing with that?
Somebody want to take that on?
Chairwoman, Senator
Mr. Wilhelm.
Senator Jungbauer. We're certainly concerned about that. Obviously, we've been working with the Department of Energy and getting information out about how folks can recycle responsibly. And CEA, which is the Consumer Electronics Association, has a website now devoted to responsible e-waste, which you can type in your zip code and actually find out what to do in your community. It's a great resource. But I also hear from the experts, I think, you know, they'll be coming up on the next panel, as you allude, that a lot of folks actually don't get rid of TVs or one of these items that just doesn't go away. You know, they actually, people move it around in their households. So if it starts out in your living room and then you get a new TV, you tend to move that into your children's room or into the kitchen or into the basement. So, you know, you'd be surprised at how many TVs are just recycled in a household rather than being disposed of.
I guess I'm thinking,
Senator,
like I said, I have three televisions that aren't worth paying a full price for a converter box. And so I don't think they'll get recycled since they won't be working, apparently. So it just, the analog just drops off and they don't work anymore. Is that what I'm?
Yes, Ms. Seidel.
Madam Chair and Senator, they can still be used for gaming and that, and movies and gaming, and I think that's what Tony was alluding to. But the other thing was we do have an advisory, too, that we put together in conjunction with the Environmental Protection Agency, which provides tips to consumers if they do choose that it's time to go ahead and let that analog set go, where they can take it so that it will be recycled and not necessarily wind up in a landfill somewhere. But also, I've heard about communities around the country where even though to you that analog set just isn't necessarily worth keeping, where they've actually had programs in the community where people bring their old analog set because they no longer need it, and then they have other people who don't need their coupon, and they actually wind up giving an analog TV set that somebody else wouldn't be able to even afford and the coupon, and here's a family that before didn't have a TV or any programming, and they now have a set and a coupon to get them a converter box. So there are different ways, I think, that the sets will be recycled.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? Well, then, thank you very much. This has been helpful, and I appreciate it. Thank you. And then the next speakers are Mike Martin and Jim Dubois, and they will provide an overview on the transition in Minnesota.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to appear before you today. My name is Jim Dubois. I'm the president and CEO of the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Minnesota's television broadcasters are actively preparing their viewers for the upcoming digital television transition. Stations are airing public service announcements and long-form programming to educate viewers on the DTV transition. TV station staff and representatives of the Minnesota Broadcasters Association have made hundreds of presentations to community organizations over the past several months to explain how viewers can continue to receive free over-the-air programming after February 17, 2009. Broadcasters have partnered with cable, satellite, consumer electronics retailers, nonprofit community organizations, as well as the federal, state, and local governments to educate and inform the public Our outreach efforts will accelerate as the transition date rapidly approaches. Our efforts to educate consumers are ongoing. This past summer, the Minnesota Broadcasters Association partnered with locally based Best Buy and Apex Digital to produce and distribute a 30-minute public service television program titled DTV Simplified. This program has aired and is continuing to air on hundreds of TV stations nationwide. Many are airing the program on multiple occasions. DTV Simplified is also available online on YouTube. During the Minnesota State Fair this past summer, the Minnesota Broadcasters Association partnered with Minnesota 4-H, Twin Cities Public Television, and Best Buy to staff a DTV educational display. 4-H youth ambassadors and volunteers from the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and local TV stations provided hands-on assistance to fairgoers who needed help making converter box connections, obtaining coupons, or assistance with antenna and installation problems. Thousands of brochures with DTV information were distributed to fairgoers in English and Spanish. Handouts were also available in other languages. Minnesota 4-H continues to provide assistance to Minnesotans who need help with making the DTV transition. 4-H DTV teams are available across Minnesota to provide education to community groups and other organizations. As February 17th draws nearer, broadcasters and their partners in the cable, satellite, nonprofit, retail, and government sectors are gearing up to help ensure as smooth a transition to digital as possible. A series of simulated analog signal shutdowns called DTV soft tests have already taken place and will continue to take place over the next several weeks. Viewers who are still watching an analog signal will be alerted that their TV service will end at midnight on February 17th and will receive instructions on the steps necessary to receive digital programming. Viewers will be directed to telephone and online resources that can answer questions and provide assistance when needed. The Minnesota Broadcasters Association is providing a toll-free number for DTV questions. In addition, phone banks will be in operation during prime time DTV soft testing later this month. A national phone bank is also being established by the National Association of Broadcasters and should be active shortly. Minnesota's TV broadcasters will continue their efforts to educate viewers and reach out to communities at risk during this transition. We look forward to working with key stakeholders in the DTV transition to ensure that viewers continue to receive free over-the-air programming. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mike Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Cable Communications Association, a trade group of cable companies here in Minnesota. Meetings like this are a critical element, I think, in building public awareness, so we thank the committee for holding this proceeding. This project has been in the making for over 5 years, so I can assure the committee members that there has been an extensive preparation underway. We've been given the regulatory and technical background of this project, so I'll be brief. The cable television industry has been actively involved in the transition as a supporting member of the DTV coalition of broadcasters, manufacturers, satellite companies, and other video industry participants. In fact, we were the first to begin public service messages on this topic soon after the transition date was determined. The goal of that coalition has been to, one, facilitate a smooth transition from analog broadcast to digital for over-the-air viewers. Secondly, support extensive public information campaigns, and for the cable companies to keep our subscribers fully aware of these changes. The cable industry has accomplished their end on this through a number of initiatives. Nationally, the industry is committed to a public service ads on the transition valued at over $200 million to build broad public awareness. Locally, for example, Comcast has run informational spot ads some 11,000 times on cable networks. While the national and local advertising has been very effective, it is only one element of this awareness effort. Other initiatives include informational meetings with city officials and cable commissions, monthly bill inserts, community newsletters, and website links. In some cases, cable companies have provided local community access channels with instructional videos and PSAs on the transition for airing on these local channels. Locally, cable companies have maintained contact with broadcasters on technical details and engineering considerations in signal delivery and carriage. In fact, one of the first local meetings in the country between broadcasters and cable engineer representatives was in Minneapolis last March. Meetings like that have been repeated many times since in other markets throughout the country. Cooperation between the two industries has been a very successful part of the project. Every cable company has taken on extensive training of their customer service representatives to ensure that cable customers are getting accurate and timely information. Although our message to our customers is clear and pretty simple, there are many misunderstandings which we have been able to clarify. Most importantly, cable companies have assured their customers that televisions receiving cable service will continue to receive these signals uninterrupted and without the need for additional equipment. The bottom line is that cable subscribers will not need to make any changes or connections to a television connected to their local cable system. I brought along some samples of some of the materials that we've distributed to customers and officials and for the committee to look at, and that concludes our remarks.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe you said this and I missed it, but since there's the options are cable or satellite, and we're talking about airwaves that we're trying to clear, is satellite going to be a problem now as far as delivering their signal, or is that been already factored in this?
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, no, the satellite is a digital signal on a frequency that there's no interference.
Okay.
Basically.
Thanks.
So, Mr. Martin, there should be no change in the reception for cable or satellite once the transition occurs.
Madam Chair, that's correct. The what the cable companies have agreed to do is, because many of our customers, cable customers, have cable-ready sets that are receiving an analog signal, cable companies will literally convert the digital signal back to an analog signal and distribute that analog directly to the cable customers. So that those TV sets that are on a cable-ready and receiving analog signal over the cable system will actually continue to receive an analog signal after the transition. So there is no action required on the part of the subscriber.
Other questions or comments?
Madam Chair, I know there was a question addressed earlier about the availability of informational materials for legislators to answer questions that may come from their constituents, and we'll make sure that every member of the legislature receives an informational brochure over the next few days, and there is an insert for a business card. I'll put my card in there. You can direct all calls to me. Just sort of kidding, but no, we're happy to take calls of the Broadcasters Association. We'll take whatever heat off of your hands and put it on us.
I think we all received a copy of this about a year ago. But
okay. We'll inundate you with more.
I still do have mine, but I'm sure that we can use more of them. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
The next speaker is Tyler Onneman. No, excuse me. I'm sorry. It is not. Mike Hiltner and Bruce Anderson. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, good afternoon. My name is Buzz Anderson. I am here representing the Minnesota Retailers Association today. Some of you probably are surprised to know my name is Bruce, so I am the same guy.
I was surprised.
Okay.
I was on my... There's a cheat sheet here.
There's a great story behind that name, and I'll tell you another time. So, thanks for the opportunity to talk about the digital television transition from a retail perspective. As you've heard, the digital transition is one of the most significant events in television history. Retailers are a very critical part of the DTV transition. They're on the front lines with consumers, and they play a valuable role in educating them about the three options that they have, and those three options have been talked about. In fact, they've been working with so many consumers, and so many consumers have actually done what I haven't done. I haven't ordered my coupon yet, and there are over 400,000 converter box coupons that have already been redeemed by retailers in the state. So, you know, there's a pretty significant number of people that have actually done that. there's a lot of retailers that have also agreed to participate in that, although not all retailers have. There are over 100 retailers representing 577 storefronts in Minnesota that are participating in the NTIA TV converter box coupon program. They all sell the converter-eligible converter boxes. I should say they all sell the coupon-eligible converter boxes. These include many Main Street businesses and a lot of larger ones like Best Buy, Radio Shack, Circuit City, Target, Kmart, Sears, Walmart, Sam's, and so on. And many of these are also my members. In addition, there are 35 certified online sellers that people can go to online, and there's also 11 retailers that also sell by phone the converter boxes. So if you want to go online and buy over the telephone, you can do that as well. Retailers are participating in the TV converter box program, and in order to do that, they have to have met certain obligations by the federal government. They have to agree to accept the coupons. They have to provide specific training to staff so that the staff can give consumers the right information. They have to manage, obviously, an adequate inventory of converter boxes so that consumers can all get them. And they have to modify their point-of-sale system so they can accept those coupons. I'm trying to cut some things out of my testimony here that have already been said.
Okay.
So how does a consumer find out where those retail stores are at? When you get a coupon after you've ordered one, there'll be a list of the stores in your area so that you'll know where to go to get the converter box program. Alternatively, you can simply go to www.dtv2009.gov and you can enter your address, zip code, and you'll find out the locations within X number of miles of your particular address. In fact, I went to the site and looked up a few senators just to see how close they were actually to some of these sites. Senator Youngbar, you have two stores within 10 miles of your home. Senator Carlson, my senator, has 67 locations within 10 miles. Good to be from Eagan, right, Senator? The chair, Brentner Solon, has 15 within 10 miles. Senator Rosen, you have 6 within 10 miles. Senator Skoy, who's not on the committee, but up there in Clearbrook, has 6 within 30 miles. So I guess if he's got to come all the way down here, he can stop at one of those on the way back to Clearbrook. I didn't look everybody on the committee, but you can all find this by just going to that site, and it'll give you very easy directions or a very easy list of retailers you can go to. The same site also lists the 11 telephone retailers in Minnesota that allow you to order the converter boxes online. So I will just say this, with every technological shift, whatever it might happen to be, there's always some bumps. And in order to have a successful transition, there has to be a committed partnership between all of the players. And those players and stakeholders include government, broadcasters, retailers, manufacturers, and nonprofits. And we can all reach different audiences, so we happily join this partnership in urging all Minnesotans to prepare for the transition, and I would be glad to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Senator Olsen.
Madam Chair, you know, I realize how cheap Senator Youngbauer is, and so I was wondering, can you wire from one converter on a TV to another TV and to another TV? You know, like run a cable through, if you run the converter box to one TV, can you jump off of that one to the other two TVs and then only need one converter?
And Madam Chair and Senator Olsen, actually, Anderson. I've heard he's frugal, not cheap. But, actually, I can tell you this. Everybody can apply for at least two coupons, so you can redeem them both. To that question, I'll have to turn to my colleague, Mike Hiltner from Best Buy. He may have that answer, Mike. I don't know if you do.
Mr. Hiltner.
Madam Chair, members, I think...
Mr. Hiltner, just please identify yourself for the record.
Mike Hiltner, Government Relations Manager at Best Buy. To get to your question, Senator, technically you could, but the converter box can only be tuned to one channel at a time, so you'd be watching the same channel.
Mr. Hiltner, would you like to continue?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name, again, is Mike Hiltner, and I'm manager of government relations at Best Buy. Appreciate the opportunity to be here to talk about the HDTV transition. It's an important issue, as we've learned. A lot has already been covered, so let me just give you a little bit of background on Best Buy and what we're doing on the retail side to help ensure a smooth transition on February 17th. As background, Best Buy is a leading retailer of consumer electronics. We have over 1,000 stores in the U.S. We're headquartered here, as most of you probably know. We've got about 28 retail stores in Minnesota, as well as some other facilities. As my colleague, Mr. Anderson, mentioned, this transition is going to require partnership. We all can reach different audiences in different ways. Retailers can reach their customers. Nonprofits can reach their constituencies. Government needs to do their part, too. Broadcasters as well. And consumers have to take some responsibility, too, to make sure that they get prepared and make sure family, friends, and neighbors are prepared as well. We do play an important role because we are on the front lines with the consumer. Much like you will be on the front lines with your constituents as well. I want to point your attention to the packets that we distributed. You'll find a bunch of information in here about the transition, the public policy reasons behind it, as we talked about the public safety, as well as some announcements we've made over the last year about our own consumer education initiatives we've done. And then in the very back, you can see sort of a comprehensive list of all the consumer education we've done throughout the country and in Minnesota. Also included in there is a DTV tip card, and those we like to keep handy by the phone. You might want to keep them handy by your phone, too, in case you get or when you get calls. It's an easy reference to explain to constituents what their options are and where they can go. The government's numbers are on there. Our numbers are on there as well. Let me just touch on a couple of things to highlight how Best Buy is helping to ensure a successful transition. We actually started consumer education in early 2006, so about 3 years ago, when the hard date was set of February 17th. So we provide in-store information, brochure, signage, et cetera, in English and Spanish, and we have done so over the last few years. We've got dedicated space on our websites, BestBuy.com, GeekSquad.com, and some other blogging sites where we have DTV transition information, including everything you need to know about getting a coupon. We've also got two-minute miracle videos, we call them, where we have overview of the transition and then also show how to install and hook up a converter box, and those are available on our websites. They're in English and in Spanish. One major step we did that I want to point out in October of 2007 was we voluntarily stopped selling analog television equipment, and we pulled it from our store shelves. And we thought that was important as the transition was underway to make sure that anybody buying a new TV wouldn't have to worry that it's digital ready or ready for the digital television transition. Second, we are one of the first retailers to be certified by NTIA to sell the boxes and take the coupons. We currently stock three models of the coupon-eligible converter box. All of those have the analog pass-through feature, which was mentioned earlier in the hearing. So whether you need the feature or not, it comes on the box. We accept these coupons in-store and by phone, and we've built our entire DTV education campaign around knowing your three options. So we think it's important that everybody who walks into a store, anybody who calls calls our hotline, to know that they have three options to prepare. We have a non-commissioned sales force, so whatever solution people want, if they want the converter box, we can help them with that. If they're looking for a new digital television, we can help them with that. Or if they're just looking for cable or satellite, we can do that as well. As I mentioned, we do have a dedicated DTV phone hotline, and we think this is especially important for those people that live in a rural area or can't get to a retail store. They can actually just call our hotline number. They can, one, talk to somebody who's trained to help them understand their options to see if they even need a converter box in the first place, and then if they decide they do, they can actually redeem their coupon right on the phone, and we'll ship them out a box, or they can ask other questions about the other options as well. Our stores have also hosted numerous DTV workshops and town hall meetings across the country, some in cooperation with elected officials, some with FCC field staff, and some with just nonprofit organizations. Our Blue Shirt employees, our home theater employees that wear the blue shirts, that we call Blue Shirts, and our Geek Squad agents have also gone out in the community to provide expertise. And I would offer, if any of you want to do outreach in your districts and want somebody to come out and show a converter box demonstration, we'd be happy to do that as well. Other consumer education that I'll just point out, since we're good at and efficient at reaching our customers, but not necessarily everybody, we found a lot of valuable partnerships like Minnesota 4-H, which you'll hear from in a moment, Minnesota Acorn, the Minnesota Broadcasters, and other industry groups. And we've really focused on sort of train-the-trainer kinds of initiatives where it's more efficient for us to share our expertise with these organizations who then can quickly train their own volunteers, and especially the volunteers who people are accustomed to coming in their homes, whether it's Meals on Wheels or other senior groups or other organizations. Lastly, I just want to touch on the topic of recycling, because that's been an important issue for our company for several years. And it's important to first note that the transition itself isn't going to make these analog TVs obsolete, right? Two of the three options you have to prepare require you keep your existing TV, buy a converter box, or you get cable or satellite. Alternatively, that TV set is still good for a second or third bedroom or hooking up a DVD player or playing video games. There's no question, though, that people, particularly those buying new televisions, are looking for resources to recycle their TVs. And we do offer a number of easy recycling options for people to get their TVs recycled responsibly. Either if we deliver one, we'll take one away from your home. We offer in Minnesota the opportunity for people to drop off their TV at our store. And we're looking at a bunch of other initiatives to help. That's been important to the legislature here and to the state. So we're just wanted to mention a note on the recycling. I think everything else has been covered, so I'll conclude my remarks. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. Senator Alcine.
Madam Chair, Mr. Heltner, there was some talk earlier about rural areas will need a different converter box. Are your folks, like your blue shirt people, are they able to tell people, you know, when they pull them up on the thing, oh, I see you by your zip code, you're in a rural area, you might need this other box? Or how is somebody going to know which box they're going to need?
Yeah, I think,
Mr. Heltner.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. You don't necessarily need a different converter box. Geography of where you live doesn't really matter. You might need a different antenna, however, to receive the signal. There's a website and a resource that we direct consumers to called AntennaWeb.org, which is a partnership between the broadcasters and the Consumer Electronics Association. It's AntennaWeb.org, where you can actually plug in your zip code in your address, and it will tell you approximately which digital signals you should be able to receive. We think in some cases, and we actually call it out on our in-store brochure, people might need a different antenna. We always tell people to try their existing antenna first. In some cases, you might need to upgrade to an antenna, and that doesn't mean a $100 antenna, $20 or $30 antenna. Excuse me. And we think in some cases, people might have people in rural areas who used to get an okay analog signal might have a little bit of difficulty getting the digital signal. We think that'll be the exception, though, and not the rule.
What was that website again?
AntennaWeb.org, www.antennaweb.org.
Okay. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Hinder, I've ordered my two coupons. I had to count my televisions this morning, and I know that that's not enough. But I haven't gotten my coupons yet, and it sounds like we've got a lot of people that haven't gotten them yet. And I was thinking, how can I react to this? And then, you know, and I want to tell you how tech savvy I am here. While we were sitting here, I got an email from a fellow who's sitting in his office and watching this this hearing, and he said that first of all, you know, being that we've already talked about Best Buy, I don't feel too badly about plugging him. His place is called freedtvshop.com, and he sells converter boxes. But what he's saying and what he's suggesting, and I'm wondering if you could give me an answer on that, is if we come to Best Buy and buy a converter box now without a coupon, can we bring the coupon in later and redeem it? Is that a possibility?
Mr. Heltner.
Madam Chair, members, certainly as we get in the last few weeks of the program and the issues that NTIA is sort of working out right now with the Congress with respect to the coupon program, you know, retailers, I think, are looking at it several ways, best ways to help consumers. We're a little bit restricted in that there are rules that, you know, we have to follow in terms of us accepting the coupons and customers taking possession of the box. One idea, though, or example that you raise is could you use, you know, pay cash and then come back and use your coupon later? And I don't know. We'd have to look in the details of how that would work. for a retailer on our scale, if we're talking 1,000 stores across the country and having to reprocess potentially millions of transactions, that might be pretty costly to do. So we've been encouraging everybody over the last year to get prepared now, make sure your parents are prepared, your grandparents are prepared, your neighbors are prepared, so that there's not this last-minute rush, which we know there's going to be because that's just the way consumers are.
Okay.
And what I'm, Senator I guess what Carlson. I'm saying is I'm trying to be prepared, but at this point the government hasn't been prepared, or whomever is sending out these. And I guess we did hear before that they were talking about a four-week processing time. I ordered mine sometime in early December, I think it is, and I think we're more than 4 weeks
four
yet.
Six.
4 to 6 weeks to send a coupon out.
Yeah, and Madam Chair and members,
Mr.
I think you can check the status of your order as well with the number you should have been given. But, yeah, well, retailers don't administer the program, so I not much.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. It would be fair to say that if someone goes in and chooses to purchase a new television, that they're unlikely to buy something that isn't in compliance with this at this point? Or is it possible for somebody to be going in and buying a new television that would be out of, that would not have this capacity? That's one of two questions I'll have. I'll let you answer that one first. Ms. Heltner.
Madam Chair, members, at Best Buy, we made the voluntary decision in October of 2007 to pull all of our analog product because we didn't want consumers to, we thought it was important so consumers knew if they were buying a new TV from our stores, they didn't need to worry about it being ready for the transition. Not all retailers did that. However, the FCC has required that any retailer that's currently selling any leftover analog equipment that they might have in stock, which at least among the national retailers, I don't think there's very many that still have analog equipment, that they be clearly labeled to say after February 17th, you'll need a digital to analog converter box for this television to work. So if you find yourself in a situation where you're looking for a TV and you see that notice, that's to inform you that you'll need a converter box. But for Best Buy stores, all our TVs are digital. So.
And then the follow-up
Senator
question to
Sharon.
That is, thank you, I'm sorry, Senator Prittner-Solon, is mostly rhetorical, and that is that if a person chooses to buy the most current equipment, they are the only ones who do not benefit from the tax subsidy. They can't have the coupon and have a $40 rebate on a television that meets the current requirement. So anybody who's really purchasing a new television that meets the new requirements is the only group of people in the United States that do not benefit from this subsidy program. They are penalized in a sense for going to the most to the newest technology. Is that correct?
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Helper.
Members, they certainly benefit from the public policy goals of the transition, which is better public safety. And
everybody does that.
And they also benefit from the transition to digital, which enables high-definition television. And I want to be careful because we try very hard not to connect the high definition to the DTV transition because the transition is not to high definition. However, it does enable free high definition content. In fact, most of the popularity of the new flat panel TVs we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years have been consumers upgrading to this the latest and greatest in television technology, which are the
But I'm talking panel. About the subsidy. The subsidy really only benefits those who are not moving to the or choosing other system. So the government has made a decision to use public dollars to subsidize converting analog televisions or and so those who are making another choice cannot use the coupon as a way of discounting costs on a current television, correct?
Madam Chair, members, that is correct. Congress did not want to subsidize high-end electronics. Retailers are prohibited and can be decertified, in fact, from the program if they allow a consumer to use it for any other purchase. But, correct, you can only use it for a coupon-eligible converter box. Yes.
I just wanted to make that point.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Heltner, I'm not sure if you can answer this or perhaps somebody from the wireless arena can answer this, but in your brochure, in your information, it talks about the broadcast spectrum, how it's freeing up for public safety and also for the wireless, and that it'll be auctioned off to the wireless companies. Mm-hmm. Does anybody know how that works? And did have we talked about that? No, we haven't talked about that. So it's kind of fascinating to know that. this is there is going to be money coming back in. Where is that money going? And how does an auction work? And how much for?
Now,
Mr. Hiltner.
Madam Chair, members, and I'm not sure if the FCC is still here. They'd be better equipped to answer that.
Unfortunately, they had to leave to catch a plane.
I can tell you generally there was spectrum that was auctioned off, and proceeds were given. However, I, off the top of my head, and I don't have with me the amounts that have been raised so far and where they've been used. But it is an additional benefit that we should see improved wireless services for the next, you know.
So Madam Chair, does do those profit? Did that money that's coming back in? Does that go into the wireless industry, or is that going back into, say, to fund these coupons?
You know,
To the ad campaign that's being driven here? It'd be kind of interesting to know.
Yeah, Senator Rosen, I don't know, but we will find that information out
thank
for you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sancho.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the witness, Mr. Hiltner. Just kind of a quick one. Converter is a converter is a converter. Maybe one has a better switch or whatever, but if I see a $50 converter and a $70 converter, any advice on which one I should buy?
Mr. Hiltner.
Madam Chair, members, the NTIA, when establishing the converter box coupon program, outlined very specific features and basic features a converter box should have. So generally, I would tell you they all do the same basic thing, which is convert digital back to analog. There are some additional and permitted features that NTIA and FCC allowed that would not disqualify a box from a program, and a couple of those features I believe were an S-video input and a smart antenna jack that some boxes may have. Okay. By and large, for most consumers, a box is a box is a box. For some, and it was mentioned a little bit earlier about the low-power viewers, these are people who watch television, mostly community broadcast television stations, low power. To continue to watch those programs, and they're not required to transition yet, by the way, and for viewers to continue to watch those through their converter box, they need a feature on their box called analog pass-through. And all of our boxes have that feature built in, so whether you need it or not, you have it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair, one final thing. Because I am a procrastinator and have not even applied for my coupon yet, I was lucky enough today to have Mr. Hiltner show me his coupon and the letter that he received it with, which pointed out the stores in his area. I thought the committee might be interested in seeing that coupon and letter because it'll show you the format in which it will come to you as it will come to all consumers. And we'd be glad to share that.
Sure. We'll send somebody back there to pick it up and pass it around.
It's already been redeemed. So.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much
you.
For your testimony. We have one final speaker, Tyler Onneman from the Healthy Living Program. He's at the University of Minnesota. Welcome.
Thank you very much for inviting me here today. My name is Tyler Onneman. I'm the State Program Manager for Science, Engineering, Technology, and Healthy Living with Minnesota 4-H, which is run by the University of Minnesota. I just want to talk today about what 4-H is doing and how we've been involved in the digital TV program. The spring of last year, we started our program, and actually in June of last year, we did 7 trainings with the help of the Geek Squad around the state. And these trainings were for our team members, meaning adults and youth volunteers, to go out there and share their knowledge and get the public awareness out about digital television. When we're doing these trainings, the first thing a lot of our youth and adults asked us is, why is 4-H involved with TV? And the nice thing about 4-H is one of our biggest tenets is the fact that service to our community is what we're about. So with our youth and our adults, we're able to service our community, help them however we possibly can. So that's how come 4-H took this project on, is to help those who need the help. We knew that this was a big and complex issue, and we knew we had a potential small, if not large, role we could play. We knew that we had youth across the state, and we could mobilize these youth to help the members of this, or the residents of the state of Minnesota. And we had the adults out there to work with these youth to help facilitate their learning, which with 4-H is a big part of what we're trying to do, is not just have the youth do their program, but also learn about why they're doing it. So after these trainings and after getting started on our program, one of the first things that we did is we created a website about DTV. It's a 4-H website for our teams, for the public, for our youth to use as a kind of a one-stop shopping resource for them. That was the start of how 4-H members could help the community. From there, we sent them out to senior homes, to fairs. You heard about the state fair from Minnesota Broadcast Association. We partnered with them and having a big exhibit about DTV. We had a kiosk there where members of the public could come in and access this kiosk to find out where a 4-H DTV team was in their community to come and help them. The whole idea was to have these teams out there as much as possible, however possible. So from the fairs, these teams went to community events, community centers, senior homes, did presentations, talked to whoever they could talk to, talking to neighbors, friends, other community members. As a result of all this, we now have 32 teams across the state with just over 230 members on these teams. That's youth and adult working. These are across the state, mostly all outstate. Very few are in urban areas, so we're doing our share to reach the rural residents of Minnesota. Last thing I want to kind of talk about is some of the anecdotal things that are coming in from these teams. The first is some of the stuff that you've already heard is a lot of people are very well informed about digital television. However, a lot of them are doing nothing. They have this idea of similar to Y2K, that if we sit and wait the day after, we will be fine. So our teams are working now, but also know that after the transition, they'll be busy as well because something will actually happen, unlike Y2K, when the world was still here on January 1st. Other anecdotal information that is coming out of our teams is that there is some confusion coming from some retailers telling people that they have to buy a new TV, that the converter box is not an option for them, they have to buy a new TV. That is not coming from Best Buy retailers. I think it's coming from more of the outstate smaller retail shops. So we have those confusions out there. And then we have the, I call the more simple confusions, as you've also heard that, do you have your TV turned to channel 3 or channel 4? We've had issues where a cat or dog has stepped on a remote control and changed the TV to channel 5, and those, especially the elderly, have no idea why the TV is no longer working. They can't get their digital picture because now they've gone from one remote to two remotes to possibly three remotes. So we have that issue out there. The last issue that we're definitely seeing is what you've also heard is from the reception side of it, that I don't get picture, but my neighbor does. And so we are talking to them about antennas, antennaweb.org, that website as well. And going into this project, we were targeting the elderly and a lot of the rural communities. And what we're finding out is it's not just the elderly, it's virtually everybody. What we're finding out mostly is anybody over the age of 40, roughly, is having a harder time with this than those under 40. Just anecdotal evidence coming in. So, yeah, in closing, 4-H has been really actively involved in this and has taken this on as a fun project where hopefully we're doing a lot of good work out there. Thank you.
Mr. Onneman, how many young people do you think are involved in this? How many teams?
We have 32 teams. Madam Chair, we have 32 teams, and of the 230 roughly involved, about 75% of those are actual youth. The other 25% are the adults.
Thank you. And about how many people do you think they've helped?
Madam Chair, it kind of depends on how you want to address
that. Can they come
that.
To my house?
And some have. That's a great question. When we started this project, we told the youth that we don't require them to go into house just for
over
risk
40.
Management. However, if properly done with the right supervision, they're definitely welcome to come to your house and help hook up a converter box. So
okay.
On our website, the 4-H website, there is a map of the teams across the state. And you can click on that map or the team closest to you, and they can either help you or find help for you. So their job is, I shouldn't say job, their role is to be of help, to be of service. So however that may be, that's what they're here for.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Did you want to speak? Come on in, Bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bill Straczynski, and I'm the lobbyist representing the Minnesota Public Television Association. I can answer the question on how the FCC operated with the frequencies. First of all television signals, all the radio signals, they all emanate from government under international treaty. So the federal government controls, that's why you have to get a license. And the analog bandwidth that was returned to the federal government was demanded part of the Graham-Rudman Act a number of years ago, almost a decade ago, as part of the Budget Balancing Act. The analog frequencies that we're returning back, all broadcasters, have already been sold for $19 billion by the federal government. That $19 billion went into the federal treasury.
Okay.
That's what happened. Thank you.
Thank you.
And, you know, the Minnesota legislature, has been covered and available to everybody who had a digital signal for the past year. Just about every home in Minnesota can get an over-the-air public television signal. And, for example, but we've been broadcasting for a year in digital frequency. And in Duluth, where you get three channels currently, as soon as you hook up your converter box, you're going to get 12 channels. Not doing anything else. You're going to get 12 channels.
In Duluth, you get three channels if you get cable.
No. I mean, over the air, don't you get three channels? Okay.
If you get cable. But I don't know now if you get digital, if you'll get the other channels.
But if you just have an antenna, the channels that you will get normally over the air, you're going to get up to 12 channels because WDSE, for example, is putting out four television channels, a public TV station, and so are the other commercial broadcasters.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Straczynski.
Madam Chair.
Senator Senjum.
If the state of Minnesota only had about $5.2 billion worth of bandwidth, we'd be able to go home early.
Yeah. Well, I'll help you in trying to find that. Our next meeting will be on Tuesday, and at that time we will have a meeting hearing from the Department of Commerce and the Department and the PCA about how they're preparing for potential stimulus package and how we can prepare for that. And we will be hearing from a number of people. We'll be meeting at 3 o'clock in this room again. Is that correct? Yeah, in this room again. So this meeting is adjourned at this time. Thank you.